Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is your new Comics Wednesday episode for December 30th, 2020, last Wednesday of the year. And we made it. We made it through this crazy, challenging year. We'll see what 2021 holds.
Not conventions.
Not conventions so far. We do know that. And it's kind of a light week, actually. Which it kind of surprises me in a way, only because, not that I expect there to be a ton of books, but last year, Christmas and New Year's like landed on Wednesday.
Yeah, it was weird.
We had more books. I mean, we did have more books last week, the day a couple of days before Christmas, and then this week, yeah, just hardly any books. So it's kind of weird. But anyway, there are a few books that we're going to talk about. So why don't you kick it off, Manny?
I'll start it off with a Marvel book for once. And that's going to be Ghost Rider Return of Vengeance number one. This is written by Howard Mackey, penciled by Javier Saltares, who also does some of the inking along with Mark Deering, with colors by Arif Prianto. This takes place in hell, and It tells the story of Detective Michael Baldino, who had become Vengeance, who had worked with Johnny Blaze and a couple of other characters. And then unfortunately, he ended up losing control of Vengeance and then lost to Anton Hellgate, who is also there with him. Now, after years trapped in hell, he is ready to get out, because it's the beginning of a series. It wouldn't be any good if he's stuck in hell. I'm not going to get into too much else because it's actually just a really fun issue number one. It's brutal. It has some nice gore in it and interesting ways of getting out. So I, for being what it was, I really enjoyed it. What was it that I got vibes out of? I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's just something like almost like a like when you're playing Doom or something like that, like where it's just like gory and it's just like action packed and it just keeps going and escalating, getting bigger. I really enjoyed it. It was cool. It wasn't the Ghost Rider I was expecting, but it was kind of cool. Now, what happens forward? That's going to be interesting because this all took place in hell. So I want to know what happens afterwards. And I kind of feel like going back now and taking a look at how we got to this point. But as far as this singular issue, it was fun. That's really what it comes down to. The art style, I felt like it really fit the book pretty well. It's kind of, it's good. I liked it. I liked the colors. I liked the blending of colors is that's exactly what I like, because some, you know, the way the flames look and everything I thought was done really well. The lavas and stuff like that, the kind of the glows of the face and the bike and things, I really enjoyed it. Was it like compelling or anything like that? No, but it was just kind of gory. It was action packed. It was kind of what I almost like a badass, and I know this sounds weird because he's already a badass character, but like a Lobo type thing, but like a little bit more R-rated. I don't know. It was good.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is actually a return or if it's just a one shot, because it wasn't.
You know what? I think it is a one shot. What I'm trying to say is hopefully it comes back.
Well, see, that's the thing about it. Like, you know, Howard Mackey, he wrote a lot of the Daniel Ketch Ghost Rider when Ghost Rider first returned in the 90s. And he was popular, a very 90s character. A lot of people associate when they think of Ghost Rider, that's who they think of, the Daniel Ketch version from the 90s. And they don't even know about the original Ghost Rider, Johnny Blaze, from the 70s. And so you just kind of wonder. I mean, Mackey established all kinds of other continuity, and the original Ghost Rider was just Johnny Blaze, one guy, there wasn't a bunch of tangential characters, but like Marvel always does, they brought Daniel Ketch back, and then eventually it was established he was Johnny Blaze's half brother and what have you, and he was popular, so they came up with all these other characters, you know, and they tied them all in together, and you had Vengeance, and you had Blackheart, and you had, you know, all kinds of other characters beyond just Ghost Rider. And so Mackie really, he leans into that in this series. So if you read the Ghost Rider stuff back in the day, the Midnight Suns and all that, then you're really going to enjoy this. It's going to be a trip down memory lane. But the thing is, it sets up and it draws on so much of that, that you wonder, okay, well, are we going to see more? Are we going to get some kind of a Ghost Rider series, or a Vengeance series or whatever? So yeah, it was interesting. And then, you know, with Javier Salteras on art, you know, he was one of the artists from the series back then. So makes you wonder.
It'd be nice, because, like, you know, I'd rather have this than Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah, that's true. That is 100% true, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, let me talk about my first book. It's an Aftershock book. It's called Kaiju Score. This is issue number 2. I talked about issue number 1 on one of our 12 Days of the Comic Source episodes. And the writer is James Patrick. Art and colors are by Rem Brew. Letters are by Dave Sharp. And basically, this is telling the story of a gang of criminals who are looking to pull a heist during landfall for a kaiju. So in this world that they inhabit, kaiju are just sort of just things to be expected, you know, kind of like a hurricane or other natural disasters. And so it's all about, you know, trying to get the score set up and if they're going to be able to pull off the heist and the danger of a kaiju. And in this second issue, the heist kind of gets going in full swing, but there are certain problems that crop up, like there always is when you pull heist. So it's continuing to be a really interesting story. I love that mashup of taking two sort of classic, you know, themes for storytelling. I'm a sucker for a good heist story, whether it's a comic or a movie or whatever. I like all the moving parts and how they solve the puzzles, so to speak. And then you take kaiju, which is another, you know, really kind of beloved storytelling trope. And I'm not as into kaiju stories. I mean, they're okay. They can be done really well, like Pacific Rim. Then yeah, I'm definitely in for the spectacle. But anyway, you take one of my favorite and one that I think can, and when done right, is really interesting, and you mash them together and you end up with Kaiju Score, which I think is a very worthwhile book. And it's been a lot of fun so far. You know, I don't want to say much more than that because I don't want to spoil, but you definitely should check it out. If you're a fan of heist stories, if you're a fan of kaiju, you're definitely going to love this story. So it's from Aftershock. Like I said, this is only the second issue, so I'm sure the first issue is readily available. What do you have up next, Manny?
I have from DC, Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Dark Knights Metal. And that has a creative team of Scott Snyder, Jackson Lansing, and Colin Kelly, with Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly doing the writing, obviously based off of Scott Snyder's story. They're all penciled by Carl Mostert, and inks by Trevor Scott and Noel Ratman, and colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. So if you've been following along on these Dark Multiverse stories, they're from different famous stories, but flip them, where the bad guys win and kind of the aftermath of what would happen. We've already seen a few of these, and some of them were pretty good, some of them were not so good. This one in particular deals with one of the biggest storylines that we dealt with a couple of years back, which was Dark Knights Metal. Barbados was obviously the antagonist and the big bad of that. That's the first time we saw the Dark Multiverse. We saw the copies of the Justice League, but as Batman, it's where we got one of Jason's favorite characters, now the Batman Who Laughs, who is now the major player in the current Dark Multiverse, Dark Knight Metal, Dark whatever it's called now. I can't think of the top of my head. And so this takes it back to that event and what would happen if Barbados would have won. And actually, I really, really like this. I don't know if it's just because of the fact that it's kind of closer to as far as that we just went through it, but it almost felt like this maybe should have been a direction that they should have gone before resolving it, because it focuses around supposedly the last person left, really, really just like clinging to hope, is nobody who you would see coming. It's actually Duke. And I'm speaking about Duke, the one of the latest Robins, who was also the Signal, and he's kind of taken the mantle as a monitor, and he's got the outfit and everything, and he's trying to survive as best as he can. He's trying to hold on to hope, hold on to an idea that they can overcome this and win. Duke Thomas, that's his last name. And then what ends up happening is he finds that hope in the sense of some of the other characters that were left behind. You can see them on the cover. This isn't a spoiler. One of them being Nightwing, Hawkman, Hawkgirl, Bobo, and in a Red Tornado robot suit, which is dope. And then a skeleton version of the Flash. So it's a book where it's like, we're going to go down swinging, and how, just the way that heroes should come together, and Duke Thomas ends up being that spark. I really thought that Nightwing's guitar was fantastic, and the different picks that he has and how he uses it. It was really, really cool. And like I said, I really like this, and I wish there was more to it. And but it's one of those one shots where it's what could have happened if Barbados would have won, if they flipped it around. But I could not help but to like cheer them on, and I even hope that they can win, and that there was actually hope. I think that they really conveyed that really well in their pages. And then I thought the artwork was just really, really good in it. Love the colors. it was really good. I liked it a lot.
I didn't like it. And there wasn't anything particularly wrong with it, except I'm not a fan of Duke. I don't technically think he ever was a Robin, but I don't know. I'm just not a fan. I feel like Duke was introduced and then never really did much. And then he sort of has superpowers out of nowhere. I'm like, eh. But I don't know. I just felt like he was kind of a poor choice to be the last man standing. Cause it didn't, I don't think we've ever gotten a good Duke story that makes us really care about the character. At least I don't. So it loses any, impact. But beyond that, it just reminded me of what a mess Dark Knight Metal was. And as much as Dark Knight's death metal has been not as bad as we expected, it still is a mess. Like, I was thinking about it after I read it. we have a Dark Knight's death metal one-shot, the last one-shot before the finale, to talk about as well. And I just go back and I look at all these events that DC has had, starting with Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, and have some of them been big and bloated and weird? Yes, they have, but I still feel like at the core, they're understandable. You know, it's all laid out for you, yeah. And you kind of can follow along what's going on. With metal and death metal, Scott Snyder has just pulled this crazy idea of this bat god and this dark multiverse, and it's so just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. And I, you know, like the whole idea of metal was like, okay, so there's these metals and, but we never really got the answers to, you know, how it all works together. I don't know. It just, it felt choppy. And we kind of let it slide because eventually they won, except they broke the source wall and it's led into all the other stories for the past couple of years. And it's been okay, but it still has been messy. It hasn't been, I don't know, the continuity of it, the pacing and the plotting just hasn't been as tight as where you look back at things like Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis. Those things are so, so much better organized, you know? Right. And I just feel like this story is just reminding me how messy metal and death metal are when you really look at them. So,
and I think that's the reason why I liked it so much is because this one particular story is really clear. And yeah,
that is true.
It didn't feel messy at all. Like, when it was Duke Thomas, I was like, oh, it's Duke. Okay. But like the rest of it, like I liked it so much more than what it really was that I was like, oh yeah, I really like this. But I think it's in contrast to everything else. And I get what you're saying, because a lot of those big events have led to really important moments in DC or turning points where you know it's something different. Even Darkseid War, which led into Rebirth and a lot of great things. And this one in particular, that we're going through now, we're not really getting much. We're as a matter of fact, it ends. We're gonna go on hiatus for 2 months to what it should have been, maybe with 5G, and then we're gonna get something completely different. And so it kind of, while they keep saying that some of these things are going to be spinning out of metal, I'm not sure how much they're really going to be linking it together.
Yeah, I agree. And the other, it did have some cool moments. Like when we get to see the axe for the first time, and I won't say anything beyond that. So yeah, I mean, it was okay. It definitely was my favorite. And the thing is, the last two Tales of the Dark Multiverse one shots have been really good. So this one, I mean, first of all, the others, they're all handling really seminal events in the DC universe. You know, you're talking about the death of Superman, or you're talking about Flashpoint, you're talking about Crisis on Infinite Earths. Those are huge. I mean, when I heard they're doing a Dark Multiverse take on the story that introduced us to the Dark Multiverse. I mean, metal, yeah, we just had that. Mm-hmm. So that surprised me a little bit, but also the fact that metal, I don't think is very good. You know, I didn't expect to like it. And I
really thought metal was like the beginning of the end as far as a lot of things I messed up.
Yeah. Just kind of, but it did well. And that's why we got death metal. So I don't know. I wonder if metal had bombed, if what would have happened. I'm sure Didio still wouldn't have his job, but would have been interesting to see. Anyway, speaking of events, let me talk about Justice League Endless Winter number 2, which is the finale of that story. It's from Andy Lanning and Ron Mars as writers. We have art by Carmine DiGiandomenico and Howard Porter. Colors are by Hi-Fi and letters are by And World Designs. And it is the finale of the Endless Winter story. And that's pretty much what I could say about it. Does it wrap up the story? Yes. Is it big and impactful? No, not really. Does it end sort of the way you expect it to and that you can see coming? Yes, definitely. Is it fun? Yeah, it's pretty fun. And there are definitely hints of things to come. There are hints of things to come with Swamp Thing, as he has been inhabited by the Viking Prince. There's hints of what's to come in Brian Michael Bendis's Justice League, especially as it pertains to Black Adam. And you do kind of wonder after you read this, okay, wait, why are Aquaman and Flash not in Bendis's Justice League? That doesn't really make sense. So yeah, if you've liked this story, then you're going to like the conclusion. Again, it's not like the most important you know, DC event ever, but it is self-contained and it is a, you know, a fun story, and it's very Justice League. You know, it's very much not the Justice League of Scott Snyder, where things are sort of over the top and what have you. This is more contained, and it's more in keeping with, you know, traditional Justice League story, with the way they save the day and such. And it does have a few good moments and funny lines. I think I would have enjoyed it more with different artists on it. I've talked about these artists before. Dijon Domenico, you know, he's on Flash, same with Howard Porter. And that's where their art really shines, because it's such a kinetic style. I don't really feel their art's clean enough for, you know, a Justice League story. So in places, some of the art looks kind of wonky. But it was an enjoyable story. And overall, I did enjoy the Endless Winter story. I just wish that it had finished up with a different artist. I mean, you look at the cover by Mikhail Yanin, and it's great. And some of the moments, as I said, are really great. So, yeah, it was okay. Overall, I'd say the Endless Winter story was exactly what you expected it to be. And it you know, took the place of some of the titles for this month, so they could kind of bridge the gap to get to Future State. And I think it did it well. It was enjoyable. Didn't have that huge bloat that some of the events have, like we've just been talking about. And long-term impact, probably not much, but there's a few hints at what the future is going to hold. So, and definitely serves as a reminder that Black Adam is a dick. So there's that as well. All right. That's all I have to say about that. What's your next book, Manny?
Batman Annual Number 5 by James Tynion IV, with art and colors by James Stoke. I think that's how you pronounce the last name.
I think it's Stoko, but I'm not Stoko. 100%.
Okay, yeah, that's probably, that makes more sense. In a nutshell, this is Clown Hunter seeking out Leslie Thompson and talking about his past. And we get to see how he became Clown Hunter and how his parents passed away, which they've already talked about several times in the past. I feel like that's all he talks about, which is fine. But yeah, that's really what this was. I don't really like I really don't like the art style in this book, so that immediately took me out of it. And but I understood that I had seen a story like this before, and I might be the same artist actually in a collection of stories before. But I don't know, it just by the end of this issue, I kind of now agree with Jace as far as a point that he keeps making about Bao. Just because it seems like it almost puts it on a platter.
Yep, he's gonna be the new Robin.
Yeah, so I'm like reading this and I'm like, oh, crap, he's gonna be the new Robin. But I really didn't like this issue, because for me, there was really nothing in it that I already didn't know. And it's always an immediate turnoff, where you start off the issue with a walk down crime alley and reminding me that Martha and Thomas Wayne are dead and why Batman is the way he is, because they shove it down my throat every other issue in every medium. So to see it again, it just kind of makes the eye rolls and just kind of like, all right, let's get it moving. And we didn't really necessarily need that much exposition on his background, unless you're going to be doing something like Jay says, he's going to be the next Robin. We don't know that for a fact, but we'll be the first ones in 2021 to tell you I told you so, because it just feels that way. And even the conversation that Leslie Thompson and Bao have, it just seems to go around in circles and nothing really happens, other than the fact that he gets bandaged up because he has glass in his arm, which I think he got by breaking into her office. So you know, annuals are sometimes like that. They don't necessarily have too much meat in them. So I think probably that's what this is. Yeah. So I'm kind of surprised. I thought I was getting more, and I really got nothing out of it.
Yeah, I agree. So what I thought was weird. So, you know, I'm a fan of James Tynion, and I think he's an excellent writer. His Batman has been sort of inconsistent. It's been some of the weaker stuff that he's done.
Right.
I actually prefer his creator-owned stuff right now, especially Department of Truth, which is so raw as opposed to Batman, which feels so, I don't know, sort of safe and predictable. But what I found interesting, I'm not a fan of Stoko for this type of story. I do think he has an interesting art style, and I do think it can work on certain things. He's not one of those artists in my mind that should be drawing superhero books. His style is just
right.
It doesn't, it's not clean enough for that for me. But you know, that's fine. I think James Tynion himself is a big fan and wanted to work with him. So great. But what's interesting to me is I feel like Tynion changed his writing style to suit Stoko's art, which I guess is a good thing, but it takes it away from feeling like a superhero comic even more. And here we are with a Batman annual, which, you know, in the last few years, we've been spoiled with some really great Batman and Detective Comics annuals. Batman is not even in this book.
Well, he is, but he's drawn very strangely.
Yeah, but I mean, he's there in flashback here and there, mm-hmm. but he's not doing anything. You know, he's there as an idea. He's there in a way like, you know, somebody's relating a story and then, you know, Batman showed up and this is what he said, and this is what he did. And like you said, he looks very strange. And I've gone on record of saying, I think Clown Hunter is a terrible character. So there's no desire for me there to, you know, to read anything. And having, like Manny said, all this information that we already knew about Clown Hunter compiled into one issue just reminds me of what a terrible character I think he is. So will he be the next Robin?
Probably.
Am I happy about that? No. Do I think he's a good character? No. Did this issue change my mind at all? No. Did it make me like him any less? No, not really. I don't know that I could like him any less. I mean, at this point, you got to know a character's bad when I'd rather would have Damian, who I cannot stand, I think is a brat, but at least has shown growth as a character, when I'd rather just have him stay as Robin than bring, I mean, do we really need another Robin?
Yeah.
Like, what are we on? Like Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, Stephanie Brown, Duke Thomas, who technically never was an actual
Robin. I guess he's the Signal. He's not, he didn't take the Robin.
Yeah.
But still, no, it's the same. It's like, it's a Robin without being a Robin.
Yeah. Still a sidekick. Damian Wayne, that's six. I don't think Harper Row, and she's Bluebird. She never was really, but it's kind of in that same vein. Like that's enough, you know, that's enough. And then you still got Nightwing. And I mean, I don't mean to count them twice, but
you got like Cassidy Kane maybe, or Orphan.
Yeah. Cassidy Kane, Orphan, Barbara Gordon. Like the Bat family is big enough. We don't need, now we got Harley and we got Ghostmaker. Like, dude, chill. We don't need any more. We really don't need another Robin. I didn't think it was a great issue at all. Thought it was pretty terrible. Anyway, on to my next book I'm going to talk about. It's Amazing Spider-Man number 55. It's from writer Nick Spencer and art by Patrick Gleason. We have colors by Edgar Delgado and colors by Joe Caramagna. And speaking of things that last too long, I think I've been saying this for a while about Nick Spencer's Spider-Man. He's giving Bendis a run for his money. This is the most decompressed story. And here we are. We're still in the Last Right storyline, part six now, and still nothing has happened. Like literally all that's happened in this story is Pete now knows who Kindred is. Pete knows that Kindred is Harry Osborn. And he's captured Peter. And that's it. Like, we still don't really understand the motive behind it. I just, man, let, can something just happen already? Like, I don't know. I'm so ready for this Kindred storyline to be over and done with. 55 issues that Spencer has been telling the storyline. Like, it's time to get another writer on Spider-Man. I'm sorry. I'm not a giant Nick Spencer fan. He's done some things that I like, some things not as great. But I just, this has drug on too long, you know, and for all the words and all the, cause it's, this isn't one of those comics where there's hardly any dialogue and you can be done in 5 minutes. You know, it takes you 10 or 15 minutes to read it, but you get done and you're still like, well, like one story beat per issue, you know, and these things are like $5 now. It's not enough. It's just dragging on too long. It needs to move faster. It needs to be faster paced. And you know, I wasn't a big fan of Ryan Ottley on the book, and Patrick Gleason is a good artist, and he can draw on a myriad of different styles. And for whatever reason, he's decided, I guess for purposes of keeping things kind of similar continuity wise or aesthetically, he's drawing like Ryan Ottley, which I didn't like Ryan Ottley on Spider-Man from the beginning. I almost dropped it. And now we get Patrick Gleason on, who can be an incredible artist, and he's drawing like Ottley. It's so annoying. Like we need a new creative team on Spider-Man. Like, enough. This is our flagship character. It's supposed to be, you know, a good story and uplifting, and this Kindred thing is just like, even like, forget about it as sort of a background story, you know, a subplot, if you will, where Kindred is kind of pulling the strings and causing other things to happen, which are the main plot. Just talk about, okay, well, how long have we been going with the last remain story, where it's been the only thing that's been in the book? It's like, started with issue 47. So we're 8 issues in, and we've gotten a big fight with the Sin Eater and Pete finding out that Harry Osborn is Kindred. That's it. 2 things, 8 issues, 2 events, 2 plot points. It's got to come faster. It's got to come faster. I don't know. It just, it feels, for lack of a better word, term, it feels phoned in by Spencer. It feels completely phoned in, like he doesn't care. So it's Spider-Man has not been enjoyable. Just want to get through this story and get something new. So can't recommend it. Hasn't been good.
Oh, hate to break it to you, but Nick Spencer staying on The Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, I know he's in the solicits, but you know, we did talk about on a previous episode that Marvel may be looking to do some sort of rebirth.
I know, but from the storyline that they're starting in March, he's continuing on. And that's going to the only thing new about that creative team is going to be the new spider suit that they're introducing, which looks which has the Taskmaster colors.
I saw the new spider suit. It looks terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know how you.
Well, I don't like the eyes more than anything, but it's like, I don't know. The eyes really, really throw me off more than the rest of it.
I don't know. I think the whole thing looks, the color scheme, it looks bad.
But yeah, he's going to continue on. It's going to be a Kingpin story
yeah, but I'm hoping is that that's going to be his last hurrah on Spider-Man. So we'll see.
We have
the March solicit, so we know that, you know, he's on for the next couple months, but I'm hoping that's the last of it. But
you remember when everybody was mad at him because he turned
Captain America and the Hydra? Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's not that I'm not complaining about whatever. I mean, tell the story you want to tell. Like, I get it. And I'm not, you know, railing against him introducing a new costume. I don't like it. I don't know how you change. And here's the thing. We know, just like anybody who's ever read a comic should have known that Captain America wasn't going to stay evil.
Right. Like Lex Luthor staying on the Justice League.
Yeah. We know that Spider-Man's not going to stay in this costume. You know, he's going to go back to his classic. Marvel's got billions of dollars wrapped up in the licensing for, you know, the old school red and blue costume. So it's not going away forever. They're just doing this for a story point or whatever, and it's fine. So I'm not going to rail against it. If he has ideas for stories and this and that, great. It's not the ideas themselves. It's not the fact that, okay, here we go again. Harry Osborn is the bad guy again. Harry Osborn's gone crazy again. It's not the story. It's the execution. It's the fact that the pacing is so slow that you've got to read like three or four issues to feel like you've gotten enough story for even one issue. I mean, there was an issue, I think it must've been issue 53 where the reveal happens for Peter to understand that Harry is Kindred. I mean, we already knew it as the readers, but Peter didn't know it. That's literally the only thing that happened in the issue there. And there's almost no dialogue, the entire issue. You can flip through the comic and be done in less than 5 minutes and you're paying $4. It's not okay. It's not okay. So I'm not saying that he has bad ideas. I'm just saying that technically, and I'm usually the last one to analyze something, you know, technically. I'm like, well, you can find worth in it one way or the other, but no, it's been going on too long. The pacing, the plotting, it's not the ideas at all. I think Nick Spencer has some good ideas sometimes. Sometimes he may have ideas I don't necessarily care for, but I'll stick with it because I like the character. But the execution on Amazing Spider-Man has been poor right from the start in my mind. And the same thing on the art side of things, you know, I'm not a fan of Ryan Ottley's art. So, you know, I read Invincible despite his art, and I feel the same way about Amazing Spider-Man. So I was happy when I heard we were going to get a new artist. And now here we have Patrick Gleason drawing like Ryan Ottley. It's just, come on, man, do your own thing. So anyway, enough negativity. What do you have up next? One more book, right?
Yeah. I have Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Last 52 War of the Multiverses. So this takes place after the events of, what was it? Dark Knight Death Metal 5? I think it's 5?
I think it's 6.
6, all right. I don't know. There's too many of them now. But so Wonder Woman got all big and shiny and whatever. And the Darkest Knight has killed Perpetua and is ready to make his final blow against the multiverse. He's bringing in all kinds of dark versions of everything to fight the last bit of heroes and villains left to fight for the current multiverse. The way this book describes them is the Wonder Woman's leading the heroes, Superman leading the villains, Batman, the dead, and then everyone else in between. And so this book, like every other one of these one-shot books, is a massive, it's like 80 pages, I think. If you want to look that up, I'm not 100% sure. But
it's 80. Yeah, I think it's 80 pages.
Okay. So bear with me because this is a long creative list. There is Wonder Woman in Fight, Joshua Williamson, Scott Snyder, writers, Dexter Soy, Scott Koblish. Thank you for my Adam. It was wonderful. On art, Veronica Gardini on colors. And then there's Superman in First and Last Men with Magdalene Visaggio. As a writer, with Paul Pelletier on pencils, Norm Ratman inked, and Adriano Lucas on colors. Then there is Batman and the Batmen Who Laugh, James Tynion the IV on writing, Alex Maleev on art, Matt Hollingsworth colors. Then there's the Atom in Unstable Atoms, written by Kyle Higgins, with art by Scott Collins. And then you have John Kalitz on colors. Then there's Lois Lane in No More Superheroes by Regine Sawyer with Alitha Martinez penciler, with Mark Morales on inks and Emilio Lopez on colors. Raven in Falling Through the Cracks by Che Grayson with art by Pop Man and colors by Chris Sotomayor. The Penguin in Apicius by Marguerite Bennett, inks by Inaki Miranda, and colors by Eva de la Cruz. John Constantine and Armageddon Blues by Matthew Rosenberg, with art by Rob Gilroy, with colors by Marissa Luis. And then Swamp Thing and Reign of the Swamp King by Justin Jordan, with art by Mike Henderson and colors by Adriano Lucas. So each of these is what everybody's doing as far as fighting in these last moments that is going to all obviously conclude with the last Dark Knight's Death Metal issue. The Wonder Woman fight book really is her and the Darkest Knight having a conversation. She's telling him to give up. And obviously Wonder Woman is, no, we got to fight on. That's what that is. It's okay. First and Last Men with Superman. I like that one just because of the fact that it keeps his theme of hope, and it shows how his impact and his on other super men and women and how they now embrace that same symbol and what it means to them as well. Probably one of my least favorite ones was the Batman Who Laugh, because it was Batman and the Batman Who Laugh really just going back and forth, how they outthought each other, with one saying, haha, I did this, and the other one going, well, I knew you'd do that, so I did this, and the other one goes, well, I knew you would know that, so then I did this. And I was like, this is stupid. Whatever. Moving on. Unstable Atoms was okay. The Atom and Mr. Terrific, and they have an idea with the metal men that they want to try and help and kind of stop all these other beings from coming by. But the Atom's really questioning in a moment where magic and mythology is so apparent and important, what chance does science really have? And that was really pretty cool. No More Superheroes with Lois Lane was okay. I'm not the biggest Lois Lane fan, so just it's her confronting herself in a world where a version of herself that kills superheroes, and so that's kind of like, so like she's like really looking at herself and it's like a nightmare version of her, so whatever. Falling Through the Cracks with Raven, the Teen Titans confront obviously an evil version of themselves, and Raven really coming through and standing up to them and almost kind of, I would say, cementing herself as a leader, as you know, as the powerhouse of the team. I thought that was pretty good. The interesting one was with the Penguin, and as he faces off against three different versions of himself, and how he just detests all of them for various reasons. And it's kind of him dealing with those versions of himself in an exaggerated form, and how appalled he is. I thought that was actually really interesting. Probably one of my favorite one, just because it's fun. Armageddon Blues with John Constantine. He confronts a version of himself that's more of a punk rock version. And right as is hit, the evil version of him is going to kill him, they decide not to kill each other and go for a drink and talk to each other. And that's it's fun. It was interesting. And in a John Constantine way, that's all I got to say about that. The Swamp Thing one, by that point, I kind of ran out of steam reading all of these. It was a little bit kind of muddy and confusing as far as the way things developed. I think they added too much into it. I thought it was going to be cooler because of the fact it started off with introducing Frankenstein and Solomon Grundy and a couple of other Clayface. And then they were just kind of there. So I was wondering what the point of all of that was. So it was all right just to kind of see where everybody's at, but not a book I'd buy. But you know, it's kind of cool to see so many creative teams go at it and do different things. Like, it's nice to see Kyle Higgins on a DC book. And yeah, and like Marguerite Bennett's Penguin story, I thought was fun. So yeah, just so let's wrap this metal thing up.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, I think I saw Scott Snyder saying basically this is all the various fights that are going on, that they won't have room to showcase them in the final issue of Death Metal, you know, the seventh issue. So this was an idea of what was going on. But again, kind of like the Tales of the Dark Multiverse version or one shot that we got, it's just a reminder of how messy this thing has been. I agree with the two that you called out as being pretty good. The Superman and First and Last Men, I thought was interesting because we get to see different versions of Superman from different planets in the Dark Multiverse. But then we have the Superman family standing against them. So that was cool. The Penguin as sort of a good guy fighting the evil versions of the Penguin was interesting. That's the best word for it. It's just as Manny described it. And yeah, he described the Armageddon Blues with Constantine perfectly as well. It's just fun. So that was probably my favorite. Although Superman was a close second, the Constantine one goes kind of, you can kind of see it coming, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
At the same time, that was refreshing because so many of the characters and so many of the things we've seen in Death Metal have been just kind of out there, you know? So it's nice to have something familiar. So yeah, I'm definitely ready for this whole metal thing to come to an end, because this is just a perfect example of how far off the rails we've gotten. And it's enough already. Let's just end this thing and get back to the DC universe that we kind of know and love.
I don't know, man. Bendis is on Justice League. I don't know how much we're going to know and love it then.
Man, I'm just not going to read that. I'll be fine.
It's weird, man. It's Justice League.
Yeah, I know. Don't really have a choice though. All right. Let me go ahead and talk about my last book. It is, let me get there. It is Iron Man, Doctor Doom, King in Black, special number one. It's written by Christopher Cantwell. Art is by Salvador LaRocca. Colors are by Guru EFX, and letters are by Travis Lanham. And this is basically Iron Man and Doctor Doom teaming up against a nullified Santa Claus. So it's exactly as crazy as you think it will be based on that description. The highlight of the story is the interaction between Iron Man and Doctor Doom. So Christopher Cantwell he's currently writing Iron Man, and he just finished up his Doctor Doom series. So their voices are very consistent with kind of what their current status is in the Marvel universe. I will say that in the Iron Man series, Tony's a lot less sure of himself than he is here, which sort of makes sense because you're tying into a bigger event. So you want to be a little more familiar. So what's going on in Tony's book is less reflected here than what was going on in Doom's book. With the voice of Doom and how that sounds. But that being said, it's still those characters. It's still familiar if anybody's been reading those Christopher Cantwell series. And yeah, like I said, the highlight is the interaction between Doom and Iron Man and their conversations about, you know, could this really be Santa Claus? It's interesting. It's not like they argue about who's smarter, you know, directly. But they make little snide comments here and there, and yeah, it ends up being a really, really fun story. The art by Salvador LaRocca. I mean, he's great. When he was drawing the Doom series for Cantwell, he was the perfect choice for that, and I feel like it's the same here. Plus, if you've been reading the King in Black series, you'll know that Iron Man is sort of wearing a nullified armor right now as well, trying to fight against all the symbiotes. He's got a little piece of venom that he used to basically create a new version of the Extremis armor that is sort of tied into symbiotes to try to to fight against Null. So that's kind of cool to see as well. I'm not reading any of the King of Black stuff at all. Just a few one-shots here and there, or I'm reading the regular books that I normally read that are having tie-ins, but I'm not getting sucked in to King in Black. But I think if you are reading King in Black, that you would want to pick up this issue, because it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's Christmas and Santa Claus. So beautiful art, great color work as well. It takes place at night. So the color work by Guru EFX, a lot of blues and grays, which really suits, you know, the setting of the story. And seeing this nullified Santa Claus, he does look sufficiently evil. And even the reindeer are infected with the black goo of the symbiote, and they look evil as well. So yeah, all in all, a really fun issue. But like I said, kind of a light week. So that's it for the books that we're going to talk about. Let me give a rundown on some of the other titles you might want to be on the lookout for. We have from Aftershock, Sympathy for No Devils, number 3. I haven't had a chance to read beyond issue 1 in that series, but it definitely is on my list. Over at Dark Horse, we have Stranger Things and Dungeons and Dragons. That crossover is up to number 3 of 4. There's also a Ginny Hex special, number 1, from DC this week. Over at IDW, Rom Dire Wraths, number 3 of 3. So the final issue of that miniseries is out. Image only has a couple of books out. They've got Lost Soldiers, number 5 of 5, finishing up that miniseries. We've got Monstrous Talk Stories, number 2, from Marjorie Liu. And then Nailbiter Returns, number 8. Over at Marvel, we've got Avengers, number 40, which is continuing that big Phoenix crossover storyline. Power Pack, number 2 of 5. We also have Werewolf by Night, number 3. Wolverine, number 8. And X-Men, number 16. And from Vault Comics, Engine Word, number 6. And Wasted Space, number 18, from Michael Morisi. So, like I said, it's a pretty light week. And I think that we're getting the finale of Death Metal in a couple weeks. It'll be nice to see that storyline come to a close. And then it'll be, I guess, all future state all the time. It's going to be interesting to see how that story plays out, see how we like this glimpse into the future of the DCU. So anything else to add, Manny?
Nothing really.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. As always, we want to thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.